Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is episode 27 of the season, recording on August 1st, just 2 months left to go in the Major League Baseball regular season. I'm joined by my partner in crime in so many ways. We're in different parts of the world now, but we've got together here today for a very special episode because it is trade deadline day. All the trades have occurred. Everything has gone through. It's been a pretty exciting one. And with me is Matthew Davis at Matty Wood on Twitter. Matty, how's your summer been going so far?
Great. When you said other parts of the world, I was really hoping that I was living somewhere, on the coast of Italy somewhere. But yeah, Chicago, Illinois, and the northern suburbs will do. It's great to see you again and catch up, as you and I have not been recording together due to time constraints and scheduling, but you've been bringing on guests, and every once in a while, I've been bringing on guests on the Monday episode when time forbids or allows to do so, and you and I are going to be talking about the trade deadline. You created the article that is free and available at FTN Fantasy, going through all of the trades along with your reactions and fantasy impacts, and we're going to sort of go through that tonight as well, and hopefully give the listeners some fantasy advice for the last 2 months of the season, because there are certainly things that happened and there are players available in your leagues that are going to be able to make an impact down the stretch. So this is going to be a fun and exciting and hopefully entertaining episode, and I am happy to be here.
Yeah, so let's kick things off with the AL West. So this is the place where, to me, is just kind of the biggest impact, and specifically because of arms, pitchers that have made their way over here. And for the most part, it just kind of feels like this has been a predominantly starting pitcher, heavy trade deadline. A lot of these arms, other than Eduardo Rodriguez, that we'll talk about later, making their way over. The White Sox almost got rid of their entire staff. At some point, Dylan Cease looked like he might have been traded today, but it didn't happen. And same thing, Mike Clevinger was rumored. But either way, we'll go through these a little bit at a time. But the AL West, obviously, the Mets are sellers. They have parted ways with Justin Verlander, and the Rangers got Max Scherzer. And this is a rather competitive division here. You've got the Rangers have been holding a lead for a good chunk of the season. The Astros were back as far as, I think, 10 games just maybe 6 to 7 weeks ago, and they've caught up. They essentially have the most same amount of wins heading into Tuesday's contests. And I don't know. I've been, the last few weeks been kind of talking to guests on the pod about how it just kind of feels like it's going to be the Astros again. Just with the fact that, Rangers bad timing, losing Corey Seager, although he'll be back, Jonah Heim out. I think Adolis Garcia is banged up for a little bit. Nathan Eovaldi, your boy, got hurt, but they have made, some great additions too. In fact, to the staff, Max Scherzer, Jordan Montgomery. They also received Chris Stratton, from St. Louis, former Pittsburgh closer for a little bit. And then a little backup for the backstop for Mitch Garver while Jonah Heim is out. It's Austin Hedges. So does anything change for you as far as Max Scherzer and Jordan Montgomery's trade value coming from the NL now to this competitive Rangers team?
Team context, they're getting upgrades there. They were playing on teams that weren't doing very well. So wins do matter. Being on teams with better offenses is helpful. So that is one thing. And then Max Scherzer, I know that he the interview with Ken Rosenthal and some of the quotes were circling a few hours ago on Twitter, and it was pretty honest and brutal as to where the Mets are currently. And I don't think that that's a bad thing for their future. They should be moving in the right direction, but as of now and next season, it sounds like they're pretty much going to be sellers or looking to stockpile talent for the future. And Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, obviously, they thought the bigger picture that Cohen, the owner, was painting, was going to happen now, and it certainly didn't. So Max also mentioned having this sort of fire under his ass, and that wasn't the quote that he said, but that was essentially how he said it, and it seemed like he was really motivated, and not that that does anything. Like, of course, every pitcher and, you know, you go out there every day and everyone wants to do great. But with that kind of breed and the Hall of Famer he is, and now pitching on a contender, and you know, just kind of a bitter ending to leaving New York and pitching on a contender, it's going to be fun to watch. And so I think that that could potentially give him just a little bit of a, maybe we get that Mad Max boost. But other than that, Austin Hedges, I think that that's a fantastic move for the starting pitchers and the pitching staff overall, because he is elite behind the plate. They didn't need to add somebody with Jonah Heim on the IL due to the wrist. They didn't need to add somebody to come in and be a thumper with a bat. So Austin Hedges with the qualified catchers is ranked first with strike rate at 51.8%. So he is truly elite behind the plate. And I think that this does bode well for what they're trying to do. They're trying to improve the pitching. But from a fantasy perspective, I don't think that there's anything that we can really do with Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, or the Rangers, et cetera, just Jordan Montgomery. With Kendall Graveman, though, and the Astros, his ownership percentages are still a little bit too high. And I think that was because we were still waiting on news with the trade deadline, but he is cuttable with his new landscape in Houston. He's currently rostered in 30% of main events and 40% in the OC. So he's actually owned in a higher ownership percentage in the online championship, which is a 12 team compared to the main event with a 15 team. I think that that's the takeaway there. Who do you think wins the division? I know you kind of hinted that you think that the Rangers win it, or I'm sorry, the Astros win it. DraftKings Sportsbook is now leaning that way. The Astros are currently minus 140 with the Rangers at plus 150. So
yeah,
things have changed.
Yeah, it's I really do think the Astros pull it off. First of all, on the Rangers real quick, it is interesting. So this is nothing to do specifically with what you said, but Mitch Garver, he's got some like wild splits this season. Although it's only about, 135 or so plate appearances, and it's really a small sample. It's really not much that should do with it, but he has been so much better as a catcher, or hitting as when he's a catcher and he's behind the plate, as opposed to DHing. And there was actually a quote, from him about that. Just for example, maybe 20 more at bats as a DH, he's got three less home runs. And keep in mind, he's only got five total on the year. Also almost 100-point difference in batting average and almost double the OPS as a catcher than he is a DH. So at least from a selfish fantasy perspective and just picking up Mitch Garver in a few leagues, I do hope he gets some time in the backstop. Max Scherzer to me is something interesting. I was on the Joe Orico's trade deadline special that he had, a StreamYard thing earlier today. And Justin Mason was on there, good friend Justin. He mentioned something specifically about Scherzer's splits. And I dug into him, and it's really interesting this season. First of all, a career worst home run rate. So it's almost two per nine, two home runs allowed per nine innings, but also a major differential between his home numbers and his road numbers. And for example, he's allowed 19 home runs away from Citi Field and just four in Citi Field. And so Texas was, originally that new stadium was built to be a little bit more pitcher friendly, but obviously offenses have been pounding there at times. So it's going to be an interesting little stretch here. He's going to face teams like the A's a little bit more often. In fact, he gets them the week after this week. So he's going to get a start this week and then get the A's, I believe, like next Tuesday. Twice. So like a week from today. And then as far as the Astros go, man, there's just something about Verlander just kind of being back to where he's at. He's been, per Verlander sort of standards, very average, especially coming off that monster season, the Cy Young, the 18-4 record, the amazing, immaculate 175 ERA. What we're seeing with his strikeout rate, his swinging strike rate, both marks are the lowest we've seen since 2015. His ERA, he somehow managed to basically nearly three, where his expected ratios in that regard are like a point and a half higher. So like a 315 ERA and then like a 4.5 Sierra and XFIP. So I think both these guys in this race, Verlander and Scherzer specifically, are going to have, like you said, fires lit under their ass. And I think they're going to pitch really, really well. And so I think fantasy managers that have them are in a good spot right now.
September 4th through the 6th, mark your calendars. It is Astros versus the Rangers. That is the last series that they play against each other in this season, and I really hope, oddly enough, that they would be able to line up against each other, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, hopefully it works out that way. The third team here that actually made some moves within this division.
Of course, us as Dodger fans, we poo-poo and kind of put them to the side.
Well, I'm an Angels fan. I mean, I still do like the Angels. Like, growing up in L.A., I grew up around all those guys and Brian Downing. And I don't know why I thought of him, of all people. But
that's okay.
Yeah, it was a fun time. It was a fun time there in the 80s when I was a kid, in the 90s. And then, of course, like, you know, that 2001 and, you know, Jim Edmonds and Troy Glaus and all those guys. But anyways, we're talking about the present. They added Lucas Giolito. He's already made a start for them as the White Sox got rid of a bunch of guys. They got your boy, Ronaldo Lopez. He hammered down a save opportunity the other day. He's a nice little backup there behind Carlos Estevez. Has been outstanding this season. And then, of course, a couple of great hitters. Well, okay, great's a little pushing it. CJ Cron, Randall Grichuk, ironically, both originally drafted by the Angels. As I think most people know at this point, Grichuk was drafted by the Angels one pick before Mike Trout. The Angels had back-to-back picks. That's who they took, Grichuk and then Trout. And so he's now back. CJ Cron, both of those guys have been hurt for a good chunk of the season, been dealing with issues. Obviously, Coors Field is a better run-producing environment, better hitting park for both of them. But, man, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being positive all around. But I just seeing these two guys come back home, so to speak, even for Grichuk, I think it's a good move. I think, you know, just kind of get that Ohtani effect going, and we'll see how it goes. I don't think they get anywhere, but at least it'll be a fun run.
I am rooting for them this year as well. I placed a ticket with a boost over on DraftKings Sportsbook right after the Lucas Giolito trade, simply because if Trout were to come back healthy and come out with a bang, and they started adding more pieces, like you mentioned, with the hitters and Reynaldo Lopez for the bullpen, etc., I want to be there. I want to be, you know, there, in air quotes, here for it, and have some sort of buy into Ohtani and Trout. I don't want to be the woogie, we'll call it, from Something About Mary, that's just kind of hating on Ohtani and Trout. I can't be there for that. So it was only a $10 bet, but it paid out like $2,000 because of the odds at the time. So yeah, I wanted to put a little something down on them just because of that. And then you mentioned Reynaldo Lopez. He's actually been pitching really well of late. They first used him in a high leverage situation in Toronto, to integrate him in a close game. I believe it was the fifth inning, and he pitched multiple innings. And then he did that again for his save. And in the second half, he has a 33.3% strikeout minus walk rate. And things have just been kind of pointing up for Reylo, lately. And Estevez, we've seen some blow saves and some bad outings here and there. I still think it's his job for now, but there could be situations and scenarios if and when Lopez is called upon that he could end up getting some saves here and there. So I do have some interest in him if he is available, simply because if he is going to continue pitching with the metrics that he's posting right now, you should get high leverage situations on a team that is winning, and he could potentially end up with some wins and saves. So I do have some interest in adding Lopez and the roller coaster that he is. And he is not owned in a single main event.
Mm-hmm.
Think it's worth a shot, right? Dollar dart, yeah. Throw contingency, at least put him on your contingency list. I mean,
yeah,
if you're, you know, if you're rolling out the Marcus Stroman's, he's the example I'll use this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So the AL East, and not a lot of activity here, to be honest. And this is another interesting race here with two really fun teams. The Baltimore Orioles, which seem to be like the Reds of the AL, like the fun team everybody wants to root for. They have overtaken the Rays 1.5 games up on them. They're both tied with the 65 games apiece. The Orioles have just played three less games. Blue Jays, not quite hot in their tails, but it's still, there's enough time for them to catch up. They're 6.5 back. Even the Red Sox, Yankees, still 9 and 10 games back. I mean, anything's possible, but not a lot of activity here. The Yankees, the only thing they did was add Kenyon Middleton to their middle relief, basically. The Baltimore Orioles, They got Jack Flaherty. The Toronto Blue Jays got another Jordan for the back of the bullpen. The two best Jordans in fantasy baseball, in baseball. Jordan Hicks will back up Jordan Romano, but Jordan Romano's on the IL currently, so Hicks will grab all the save opportunities until then, or so I assume. And then they added Paul DeJong from the St. Louis Cardinals. There's obviously the concern about Bo Bichette, who on Monday hurt his knee. And hopefully he doesn't hit the IL, but either way, that's good insurance there. Kind of seen the way that the Blue Jays have taken some of these guys and kind of refurbished them, right? Like a Whit Merrifield just kind of coming out of nowhere, essentially done for like baseball and fantasy purposes. And he's been leading off. He kind of stole George Springer's job over there. And then, you know, your boy Brandon Belt, right? Didn't he have a blast today?
Sure did.
Real
quick on Belt. This is ironic. They are actually like the Blue Jays broadcast. They're calling him like, I don't know the exact term they were using, but it was like kind of like the sneaky / silent MVP. And that's what they're saying he's been this year for the Blue Jays.
Ooh, Belt?
Yeah.
Even though he hasn't done jack? That's amazing.
Tonight was his 9th or 10th home run. But yeah, they were saying how important he's been for the offense and just being on the field, et cetera. Well, DHing and being in the lineup, I should say. But yeah, it was funny. After he hit that home run, they were pretty fucking hyped.
Well, he's beloved. Like when he was in San Francisco, I mean, like everybody absolutely adored him. I think people in the locker room, he's like the Kike Hernandez of Toronto right now. You know, they call him captain, baby giraffe, Sparky. Yeah. And he's like, you know, he had that belt last year that he wore and always kind of makes jokes about him, you know, just kind of self-deprecating, kind of laughing at himself. He made some joke during the All-Star voting about, you know, oh, that Ohtani guy's good, but he's not like me, you know? So like really, really funny dude. People know that he was my most rostered player last year. And I mean, 34-year-old guy, always hurt. It's not looking good, but he keeps getting opportunities, right? I mean, he's hitting right in the middle of that lineup against righties and you know, been doing not much, but maybe he picks things up here for the last couple months. By the way, Vladimir Guerrero apparently does not have a home run against a left-handed pitcher in like a calendar year.
That is actually factually correct. When I heard about that as well, it was sort of mind-blowing and I had to double check. I wanted to be the dude to call that guy out, but it wasn't wrong. Very crazy to hear about that. And then with the actual landscape for the Blue Jays real quick, Paul DeJong, he's been, you know, he was kind of a fab darling, 91% rostered right now in the main event. And I think eventually that's going to go down depending on the severity of Bo Bichette's injury. If Bo Bichette goes on the IL, then you're certainly going to want to get your full burn with DeJong until Bo Bichette comes back. And then I think DeJong and Belt could potentially become a lefty-righty swap when it comes to platooning, because as of right now, over the last couple of games, Belt's actually been getting some starts against lefties, and I think DeJong could potentially give them just a little bit more when Bo is back, instead of just kind of pushing them to the side like Espinal or Biggio, and making him a starter against left-handed pitchers. But I don't know if that's going to be good enough to warrant being 91% owned in the main event. But that time will tell. We don't know the severity of Bo. We know that he's day-to-day, but there still could be the IL stint. And if that happens, you'll want to hold on to DeJong for now.
Yeah. So yeah, Brandon Belt, man, the lineup slot has been great. Bo Bichette was out, he hit second Tuesday, he was hitting second in the lineup. And then third outside of that against righties, he did sit against the last couple of lefties, Kevon Biggio is essentially dust. He's not really getting much time. So, and they've been getting Danny Jansen in there as much as possible. So that bat of his has been in there pretty much all the time. Alejandro Kirk has warmed up a little bit. I just real quick on Jordan Hicks, how do you see this unfolding? I mean, I assume Romano will be back at some point. He should reclaim his job. And are we all just making assumptions that it's going to be Hicks? I mean, it should be, right? It doesn't make sense for Yimi Garcia or Eric Swanson to get the save ops there, right?
It's important to be transparent when you're trying to predict or project the outcome or the outlook for a bullpen. It really is at times. And so you want to be transparent when trying to figure out the probabilities or who, like you just mentioned a few names. I definitely think before the Jordan Hicks thing, Swanson could have still been looked at it, but it was going to be Jimmy Garcia, and it was. We saw that multiple times. Then they just started running him into the ground and was trying to use him for the third straight day, and it didn't work out. But once that occurred, they were on the phones and making a phone call, and they received Jordan Hicks. I think that Jordan Hicks would sustain the closer role for them, so that would push down the pecking order. Jimmy Garcia would pitch behind Hicks, with Swanson pitching in that high leverage role, or potentially pitching ahead of Garcia if the leverage role called for. But either way, I think it will be Hicks. That's just my personal opinion. They went out to make that trade because they knew they need to make it. Even with Trevor Richards, there's still some issues. Nate Pearson was on the IL, and he's been good and bad, kind of Jekyll and Hyde here and there. And Genesis Cabrera, who came over from St. Louis, just really hasn't been able to put it together and has walk issues. So I do believe Hicks is the guy. You certainly want to obviously be holding on to him. And then when looking at Jordan Romano, there is a possibility he comes back with the minimum stint and he returns to form and gets the rest of the saves and all is well. There's also a chance with the back spasms or the stiffness or the tightness that they're calling it, it can get ugly. He could end up needing a cortisone shot in his glute, and he could end up needing more time missed, and he might end up needing muscle relaxers and anti-inflammatories. If his body doesn't react right, the body just simply locks up, and it correlates with his lower half. It's not just the back. Like, he's not going to be able to have any strength in the lower legs. It's really tricky. And no, I'm not a doctor, but with the back, I do have a lot of experience with sciatica and doing PT, et cetera. I don't need to be a pitcher to understand the muscles and ligaments for that. And with that, we've seen it with Carlos Rodon. That was his second setback when he was trying to come back. We've seen it again and again with Clayton Kershaw. So you just don't, and hitters differently, you know, Christian Yelich, Anthony Rizzo would be highlighted as that for the back. Jordan Romano, we just don't know. Hopefully it's right away, but dude, it could end up being all year. We just don't like it. That is the possible, like that is a potential outcome for him. I don't think that's going to happen. That's on the low part of the scale, but until then, I think it's Jordan Hicks.
And then the Tampa Bay Rays, they finally got rid of Luis Patino. He was one of their darlings that just never panned out. Every time you kind of pop them in the lineup, it just didn't happen. The guy just completely lost himself, and it happens. But they did add a couple of relievers. One starter / reliever, Adrian Sampson. Remember, he played in the KBO a few years ago. Manuel Rodriguez, who was like my December sleeper pick to be the Cubs closer, and then he was basically kind of cut or just sent to the minors, kind of like early in spring training. So So he's now on the Rays. You know how the Rays like to work it with their pitchers, but this is a big deal here, the Aaron Civale trade. So he joins this Tampa Bay rotation that really needs him, really needs an arm, especially after losing a couple of studs there in Jeffrey Springs. And why am I blinking? A very good player.
Rasmussen.
Yeah, Drew Rasmussen. And so Tausch Bradley sent down to AAA. He's been kind of up and down all season. But Aaron Civale, man, he's having a career season, 2.35 ERA, 1.04 whip. Strikeouts are down a little bit from last year. They were 24%. They're 19 so far this year. Progressive was already a really good ballpark for pitchers. And obviously they have a loaded staff there in Cleveland. Now he goes to what has been the last couple years, like top three as far as pitchers' parks go. So Aaron Civale with a nice move here. Both teams are obviously competitive, so I don't think this changes his trade value all that much. And then we'll talk about Munzardo when we get to the Central.
Yeah, Civale, I think that there were some metrics that could maybe say that he was going to regress, but maybe that doesn't end up coming, being with the Rays and potentially getting an uptick in something if they pop up with the hood and want to tweak something. You never know. You never know.
And then Jack Flaherty to the Orioles. And then we saw the Orioles, they sent down their hottest pitcher of the first half of the season, Tyler Wells. He's run into some trouble over the last few weeks. He was sent down to AAA to kind of rework some things and some mechanics and such. And so Flaherty is now here. He's never known in a major league uniform other than his red Cardinal. And so now goes into this thick of the race here with the Orioles. He's been really up and down. The strikeouts have been up all year. but he's just been walking guys like crazy. I still think back, and we talked about this in the preseason, how there was a time several years ago, like before 2018 or even after 2018, after that season, it was like, okay, Flaherty and Walker Buehler are very similar in terms of being like their pathways and how dominant they're going to be. And they just went in completely different directions. I guess let's forget the fact that Buehler, Tommy John is injured and everything, but Buehler had always been good. Flaherty just lots of injuries, completely fell apart. But how do you think things work out for him here? Schedule gets tough just kind of in the offset here. He gets the Blue Jays in Toronto off the bat this week. The following week, he'll get the Astros. Is it going to be same old Jack, or is Jack going to be back?
He has a 10.7% strikeout minus walk rate, which is 1% lower than Rich Hill. He's going to be pitching in the AL East. You mentioned the other two, the next two games or teams he's going to line up against, which are really tough, in the Blue Jays and Astros. He's got the grit that I like, to be quite honest with you. I just don't know, with the walk rate and everything, if it's going to work out. Having a double-digit walk rate this year, it's at 11.1%. It's tough to have a sustainable good business, a profitable business when you're doing that. So I want the Orioles to do good. I want Jack Flaherty to do good, but I have him on one main event. So from my own perspective as a fantasy manager, it's a wait and see approach for me. I would like to see how he looks the next two times out. So I'm not going to be starting him against Toronto, and I'm not going to be starting him against Houston, two teams that have really good plate discipline. Mentioned the walk rate. That versus those teams, no bueno for me at least. And then moving forward, hopefully, maybe he's figuring something out. We'll see. Go Orioles. Let's go.
Go Orioles. I'm actually
rooting for the Blue Jays. I want to put that on note. But no, still though, go Orioles. That's
cool. I'm rooting for the Rays. And that's also what's wrong with that? They're fun, man. I mean, it's like Paredes and Wander Franco, Glasnow, the Lows, the Lows, all those guys. So, yeah, those are my dudes. Hope they do well. And yes, that has everything to do with how much I draft them all in fantasy. Right. The other, I think that's pretty much it there in that division. And then the Central, there's not a lot going on there. We did see a lot of a huge exodus because of the White Sox and the Guardians kind of shipping guys out. What's up with the Guardians thing? Maybe I haven't really looked into it all that much, but why do they get rid of so many guys? I guess some of it is like fluff or contract related, but I mean, just trade your starting shortstop and Amed Rosario. Josh Bell is probably addition by subtraction. So I really don't mind that move, but, and then they got rid of Savale, where I guess they kind of could use that starter. Like, aren't they fighting for a playoff spot? What am I missing here?
Yes and no. I'm going to kind of give them a compliment, and then I'm going to kind of talk a little shit about them. They're a sharp organization, and I think that they know that this isn't the year. This isn't going to be where they find, a little bit of pixie dust, even with, if Bieber were to come back. They're relying a lot right now on the rookie pitching depth, and we're starting to see Logan Allen kind of run a little bit thin.
Gavin Williams isn't even pitching five innings.
Right. And so over time, it's kind of catching up with them, along with the injuries and the skills from the guys that weren't panning out earlier in the year, like Peyton Battenfield and Zach Plesac, et cetera. I think that they're only one game back, right? And that's why you're asking the question. But dude, Minnesota is so much better, and they've underperformed mightily. And I honestly think Cleveland, just being a sharp organization and a cheap organization, that was kind of my one shot I wanted to give at them. I think that that's what it is. They're smart enough to know that this isn't it, and they're also cheap enough to know that they shouldn't be pushing their chips in.
Yeah, and they got Kyle Manzardo, who I think
I like
prospect
it.
Or I like prospect it. And dynasty people. They love this kid. He's injured right now, but they're looking for next year. That's really solid.
When I say I like it about a prospect, dude, like that guy, I don't know who that is, but Manzardo, he was already on my radar, which says a lot, especially because he's not in the Dodgers organization. So Who was the second person you mentioned?
He's a kid. He's just drafted. He's a 20-year-old Khalil Watson, but he's a high up there prospect, an infielder. So
shout out to FTN Discord for giving me shit recently about not being up to par on the prospects.
Yeah, but you don't have to be, because you're not doing prospect coverage. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so that's all good.
I tag Eric Cross every time. Go to him.
That's what I do. Jean Segura, by the way, Jean Segura. I don't know. No. Depends what part of the world. He was traded here to the Guardians and then cut immediately. So maybe Anthony Volpe had something to do with that. Those who know.
If he was a cut a day earlier, the Dodgers might have scooped him up. They were so desperate for right-handed hitters, and we'll get into that. But yeah, it would be interesting to see. Do you think Segura lands a job?
I don't know. I really don't know. He's been just so bad. I don't see any. I mean, he kind of picked up the pace a little bit the last couple of weeks, but power is essentially dissipated.
Damn.
Not really running. He's older. It's bad. It's bad. And the Volpe joke. I think most people know the Volpe joke was I wanted to make a point. This is before the season, and this is when the Anthony Volpe hype was going through the roof. And you know, my friend Matt Modica gives me crap, calls me like anti-Italian. That's when I have to throw my "Hey, I was born in Rome" card. But it had nothing to do with Volpe's per se, or that I don't like him, or I don't like the Yankees, anything like that. It was Anthony Volpe was going like in the top 100 overall, and I had just read a lot of stuff and just. He was just having such a hot preseason. I just didn't think that he was anywhere worth close to where he was going in fantasy drafts, especially a guy with no major league experience. And so I was just looking for somebody to make a comparison against and tweet it. And so I picked John Segura, and it was a huge mistake because I just happened to get Segura on the off year. I guess he came in camp a little bit out of shape and just, you know, injured during the season. Just a horrible example. And there was just like, you know, a few people, hardcore Yankee fans who just like, you know, a couple with big followings who just made sure I remembered it. You know, whenever Volpe hit a home run, you know, or steal a base or whatever. And there was a certain point in time that for like a good 2 months of the season where Segura and Volpe were bottom three in pretty much like all, you know, metrics, you know, like, forgot what it was, like OPS and like hard hit rate and just all this stuff. And obviously Volpe being a home run stolen base guy, you know, providing in those categories is something. But yeah, just a little side note there about the Segura being the wrong one to choose for that comparison.
The Yankees seem to have a bad mixture, a combination going on right now. It's almost like they're kind of have a trend of not being able to develop their top prospects into big time superstars lately. And then overspending and giving contracts that are, you know, far too longer than they should be to players past their prime. And then when you tack on previous injury history for some of the players past their prime, it's really a bad combination to be in right now. Yeah. It's not good.
Speaking of good organizations, hop on over to the NL West. Let's talk about our team. Let's talk about the LA Dodgers, who even after these moves, like, you know, my preseason pick and, you know, I try to separate fantasy and betting and all that separately from my fandom, but I'm a huge Dodger fan. Always have been, always will be my team. The greatest moment for me in sports history was that Kirk Gibson home run that I did watch live. And that was 1988. I was a kid, but I still think the Atlanta Braves are going to win the World Series. That was my preseason pick. That's what I think now. It just kind of feels like their team, their year. I feel like Dodgers will be next year and beyond. I think once we get Ohtani, or hopefully get Ohtani and all that. So they made some moves here. I think the best move, honestly, the best move of all, and I talked about it last week, but it's getting Kike Hernandez. I had Brendan Tuma of Underdog Fantasy MLB on last week, and we were going through like predicted scenarios, and there was a Kike back to LA rumor, and that's the one I said, this is going to happen. I really think it's going to happen. And it did while we were on the air. And mostly I'm just happy about it's kind of like these things that you can't quantify, these intangibles, like having a guy on the team like that, like kind of pumps everybody up. It's like a happier locker room. They're more in harmony. They hit better. Like, I love the fact that we get Kike Hernandez back, though he's not the best defensively. He kind of lost a step as a hitter, but that's kind of my favorite move. Obviously we got Lance Lynn. We got Joe Kelly in the bullpen, Ahmad Rosario, Ryan Yarbrough, who was like the, you know, I guess maybe plan D, to not getting Erod, not getting Verlander. But even Amed Rosario, a dude that like has essentially had a bad offensive season, or at least from a fantasy perspective, who was like a starting shortstop for the Guardians, is now basically a platoon player for us, right? Like, he's good against left-handed pitching, and that's who he'll play against. So I kind of like these moves.
Real life, a lot of really good moves here. Ahmed Rosario hitting against lefties is going to be fantastic. You mentioned Kike Hernandez. When he came into the dugout the first day, when he was in the starting lineup because there was a left-handed pitcher on the mound, they had this serenade of him. And did you see it on Instagram or anything like this? And they were all doing this clapping and this, hey, 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 hey. And he's getting lower and lower, and his legs are getting wider and wider, and his hands are on his knees, and he's doing all of his shaking and thrusting. And it's just, it's awesome. And they kind of needed that little lift. So I like that from a real life perspective. He will become somebody that you could stream. So before, I think Waldichuk's actually starting tonight. But essentially, I believe that the Dodgers were slated to face three left-handed pitchers to begin the week. Is that correct? So just as an example like that. Or no, Waldichuk is a lefty too. So they are going to be facing all three lefties. I was thinking Tuesday night, sorry. So Waldichuk and Harris, et cetera, they're going to be getting three left-handed hitters. So if you do see that week to week and you're in those kind of formats, sure, you should find yourself possibly streaming Hernandez. And then with Rosario, I wouldn't be holding on to him. You know, he's probably still universally owned, I would assume, in the main event. And that should probably change at some point if and when things unshake, where the lineup or the handedness doesn't just bode well, because he will end up riding on the pine. There were some quotes from Dave Roberts that says that Ahmed Rosario and Kike Hernandez both understand that their roles, they will most likely be coming in to pinch hit later in games against left-handed pitchers. Once the handedness does change, they'll start against lefties, but they'll most likely find themselves on the bench against righties. I know that JD Martinez, has he landed on the IL yet, Vlad? If not, no, he's going to.
Unfortunately,
sure.
I think it would make sense.
And it might be for a while. So that could help open up things just a little bit, but I almost think that it's going to increase that PT that Will Smith's kind of been missing out on, right? Those day game after night games, or now that he has the elbow contusion, I think that he could end up getting more DH duty. So I'm not necessarily sure Rosario or Hernandez end up getting more burn against righty. So yeah, Rosario, he was an eighth or ninth round pick. Not hitting leadoff anymore. I know people are excited about the team context and ballpark factor for home runs at Dodger Stadium, but hitting a little bit lower in the lineup now and not playing every day makes it tough.
Yeah. One last thing on Kike. I mean, it's just funny. You just have like these, if you kind of think about it, a lot of these Dodgers are kind of like stiffs, like kind of baseball nerds, like, you know, Freddie Freeman and Kershaw, you know, Mookie Betts and Will Smith. And then you bring in somebody like Kike, who's just like, he's funny. He's like cultured. He's just the man, right? Just gonna like make anybody laugh. It's so good for that locker room. So I'm really happy. I just envision like these guys like kind of standing around like, you know, clapping with like no rhythm as he's dancing.
That's what they were doing. What are your thoughts on Yarbrough and Lance Lynn? Do you think that there has been already some sort of resurrection with Yarbrough of late? Lance Lynn, not so much. Do you think they correct it? I think we'll find out tomorrow. We'll find out like right away, right?
Yeah. So Lance Lynn, I think he's pitching tonight because it's Tuesday.
By the time you're hearing that. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Lance Lynn is by far the worst pitcher in baseball this season, which is hard to say. And if you're just looking like results oriented, so forget about the fact he's 12th in strikeouts in baseball. Among qualified starting pitchers, he has the worst ERA, like by far. Put it like this. There are only five total pitchers with an ERA over five. And, you know, it's like Jordan Lyles, Gomber, Singer, Corbin, Martin Perez. Perez is like right under five. Lance Lynn's is 6.5, a 6.5 ERA. And with like a whole run differential to Gomber, who's third, who's like at 568. It's insane how bad he's been. You dig into things, the dude has the worst luck you could ever imagine. So his Sierra is 390. It's actually one of like above average in baseball. BABIP, like second worst in baseball, third, 328. The left on base percentage, strand rate, it's like 62%. It's the second worst in baseball behind Jordan Lyles, who's right up there with him in as far as, you know, bad luck. His swinging strike rate's fine. It's like 14%. His walk rate's fine. It's 8.5%. So maybe there's something just kind of corrects for him and works out. I'm optimistic. And this is not just like as a Dodger fan speaking, is just as a guy who has a 390 Sierra, a 4 FIP, XFIP, but it has the worst numbers in baseball. So something has to give. The luck bounces your way in better organizations with better defense. And I think that's what you're going to get here in LA.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. He's got the bulldog mentality. So either way, I'll be happy to have him.
Yarbrough, I don't know how they're going to utilize him because if you like, right. I don't know, he doesn't really feel like a full rotation guy. He kind of feels like somebody who can pitch you 3 to 4 innings when you need him. Like if Kershaw comes back, you know, what happens? Does you going to send, okay, Sheehan, I guess, would be first to get sent down. I think Bobby Miller has been good enough to stick around in the rotation, but Yarbrough almost can be a good bullpen arm. You can bring him in like as a bulk reliever guy. He has been a little bit lucky. He's obviously not this good, but since coming off the IL, he's made 4 starts for the Royals. He's got like a 2.19 ERA. His expected ratios are much higher than that. And then 15 strikeouts, not a big strikeout guy, but to only 2 walks. But then you look at the quality of opponents he faced. It was literally like the worst teams in baseball. So yeah, I don't know if he's just like suited. I don't think they picked him up because they had to have him. I think he was just available and cheap and they missed out on, you know, plans 1 through 10.
Yeah, monitor his role and usage. I think it'll be the usage and role that matters. I think he'll end up being effective and good in whatever it is. So just kind of monitor that when things start to unravel and go from there.
Padres, they added a weird bunch here. So that Scott Barlow to mix in with the behind Josh Hader there. Robert Suarez is back, which is fantastic for them. They got G-Man Choi and Garrett Cooper because their bench depth looks horrendous, and now they got some good bats they can platoon. Cooper against lefties, Choi against righties, and then old man Rich Hill. I don't know, maybe just some insurance for Michael Wacha in some case something's up with his shoulder. But I had a tweet yesterday that like if Wacha returns, like this is legit. I think it's the best rotation in baseball. People will argue with me. They'll say it's the Twins or this team or that team. Like it's like legit with Blake Snell, true MVP candidate. Joe Musgrove has been amazing. Yu Darvish has had some blips. He's not the same guy, but he's been great. And then Seth Lugo has just been dealing. So this is a really good rotation. I kind of like the Padres. I don't think they're far enough back that they can't get there, especially with that offense, the pitching, and just the whole mix of everything.
Yeah, it's certainly possible that they do get there. And it's good on Preller. I mean, he's really pushed in. When we talk about pushing in chips, he's really pushed them in. And his lifelines could be running out. So being in the position he's in, you better fucking do something and not sell. So I would have done the same thing he did. Not necessarily. I don't think ownership was kind of giving him the thumbs up to go and get something major. But yeah, being able to bring in small pieces that could potentially help them out to get them over that hump, to get them into the playoffs when it matters, that could be there. You know, Garrett Cooper, G-Man Choi, Rich Hill, Scott Barlow. With Scott Barlow, fantasy impact wise, cut him. He will no longer get any save opportunities. So he is no longer useful to us in the game of fantasy baseball. And then correlating, because we didn't talk about the Royals side of things, if Carlos Hernandez is available, I think that we saw him get the last save opportunity. And that's just, I mean, it's been waiting and we've all been waiting for it. It's no surprise. It's not, you know, I've been writing for it for weeks and weeks in the FTN bullpen update, but I'm certainly not the only one that's been talking about the speculation. Everybody really has been. So yeah, if Carlos Hernandez is available, certainly you can add him. But if you do have Scott Barlow, just cut him and move on. Don't think twice about it. Rich Hill potentially could see an uptick in wins given the opportunities if he sticks in the rotation. So yeah, party on, San Diego.
Really good account, by the way, if you don't already follow. It's he goes by Giannis Antetokounmpo, which is really funny. He's like so his handle on Twitter is Too Much Mortons, and an underscore at the end. And he is one of my favorite accounts recently. He's like a Padres insider. It's kind of very clear. And so every kind of information that's been coming out on him that's like sort of before the pack has been on point. So just somebody to follow if you're interested in what the Padres are going to be doing. Good analysis on Preller and some even psychological related stuff with that whole management there. Arizona, they all added a closer, Paul Sewald. They got Tommy Pham, who's still trying to find the stadium. You got Jace Peterson, who's kind of like a Josh Rojas replacement. And then the Giants didn't do anything. They basically, so this I'm actually pissed about. They added two guys that basically hit lefties. Mark Mathias, pretty much like, you know, just like a pinch hitter with a little power. And then AJ Pollock, who just came off the IL. I'm pissed because I was not in on Marco Luciano, who is the Giants' 21-year-old stud prospect shortstop. He played this week and he was good. And I was like, you know what? I think I kind of convinced myself. I see a path to him sticking around. Didn't play on Monday. He's already locked in my lineup and he was demoted today on this Tuesday because Pollock is on the team. So I'm taking a zero there on some very important high stakes teams. And hey, is what it is. That's the game.
You know, hey, shout out to the San Francisco Giant fans who get more enjoyment out of Eduardo Rodriguez declining using his no trade clause to not go to the Los Angeles Dodgers. That was their celebration today. So golf clap to you guys, because, you know, if a Padres fan says something, it becomes funny or humorous to me. And it's like, I get it. And then with the Giants, it's just so like God, desperate. It just reeks. It really does sometimes. And like getting AJ Pollock, like, what are we doing? Like, what? I don't even – Farhan's 80. Come on, man. You're Stanford. You got Stanford brains in you. Let's get it together. Austin Slater's there, like, and he specifically fills the AJ Pollock role with much more youth and health. And
he's been good when he's been
– I just don't get it. It's just bad. And I saw some Giants fan stuff on Twitter today. So, yeah, that's what that is. And with Eduardo Rodriguez, I actually want to say, if there is things with the family that wanted to keep him there, I get that. Families can move. But if there is health involved in that, then totally revoke my tweet or any thought that I have about Eduardo Rodriguez not wanting to win, because I did tweet something about that. But if there's health involved, I certainly don't know that. I clearly obviously wouldn't. Winning doesn't fucking mean anything.
So I was on that. I was on that Joe's, you know, live stream today, and Justin Mason was on, Michael Govier was on. And I just made a joke about E-Rod. Basically, like, you remember he had that thing with, he disappeared from the team for a little bit and some people thought he went on vacation, but he was having like marital issues. Like, I don't know what it was. I still don't know to this day, but I just made a joke that his wife had declined. Or basically had been the one to veto the trade to LA, just a joke. And then the next thing you know, I'm going on Twitter and someone else is like telling someone, "Hey, but his wife is the one that declined." I'm like, no, guys, I'm just joking. Got to know when I'm kidding.
No. And you know what? This is a whole rabbit hole, and we don't have the time for it. But like, people are like, "Why wouldn't you want to come live in California?" And people are starting to either say good things about California or bad things about California. And then I think people might've taken, I wasn't being facetious when even our friend Rob Silver, I was like, fine, I'm going to take a trip. Like, I'm going to spend a weekend in Detroit, like, to see what all the fuss is about. And it might've like sounded facetious or sarcastic. And it certainly wasn't that, because I really do have plans to like go spend some time in Ann Arbor and et cetera. There's all kinds of places that I do want to visit in Michigan. It's on my list. So, there was somebody that was like, why wouldn't you want to live in LA? And I was thinking like, well, the weather is actually really bitching and awesome in Detroit. And so I do get it. But if it is with health and stuff, then everything gets pushed to the side. I don't know what's going on in the man's house. I'm just being an idiot in my garage. I never spend time in my garage, by the way, but
hey, listen, we all, you know, especially like that, you get heated. And yeah, of course we could be like, you know, LA snobs, like, how can you not want to come to the Dodgers? What's wrong with you? Like, it's fine. And then I think at that point, it's like how we respond to people. Cause sometimes, yeah, you know, you piss off the wrong fan base. Like, I've learned, it's actually really funny. So like, if you say something about the Orioles, they will all come out, and usually like for respectful, for the most part, like really good. If you like, you know, shit on the Cardinals fan base, at least specifically this year, they just take it. No, I'm serious. It's different. They're like, oh yeah, man, they're horrible. This guy's horrible. I hate Marmol, whatever. So like, they want to change too. And it just depends like kind of where you go. And then Boston, you just don't even want to deal with. You don't say anything about the Red Sox on the, you know, you'll, you'll be kind of fighting off people for days. So not advisable. Next two divisions. Sorry.
Real quick, I didn't ask you. Who do you think wins the AL East?
Oh,
we didn't ever pick a winner there.
Yeah, I'm just gonna say the Rays.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Orioles. If I was a betting man, I'd go with the Orioles.
Okay.
Real quick, this isn't a very exciting division, but the NL Central, the Reds did not add anyone other than Sam Moll, Oakland A's reliever. They did not get help in the rotation, and Graham Ashcraft isn't great. It's actually been very surprising. He had that amazing start to the season. Great preseason, great start to the season. The middle was all bad. He was hurt. Turns out maybe that's the reason why. Strikeouts. He kind of just changed things. Where he's not like trying to be he's just craftier. And so he looks better. Results have been good. At some point, Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo will come back. But I don't know. I don't think the pitching will get the Reds very far. The Brewers, they added Carlos Santana, kind of the coverage there for Rowdy Tellez. I think that's a great add. And in fantasy, I think it's a better move for him. Mark Canha, who I talked about in the article, just kind of feels like a Brewer. Like I just saw him like wearing the hat. And I think when I see him in the uniform, I'm like, this is perfect. So maybe just things kind of light up for him. He'll probably just play against lefties. So that's a good move. And then finally, just the last team I'll touch on here and get your thoughts. The Cubs, they got Jaime Candelario back. That's, Candelario started with the Cubs many years ago, kind of played like part of a season there, and then went to Detroit for several years. He's been hitting for more power than he ever has before. He's been really locked in with the Nationals. And now he is he's back with the Cubs. So cut your Patrick Wisdoms and your Nick Madrigals, and unfortunately Trey Mancini, who just got DFA'd as well.
26% increase when you look at the differential in home run park factor from PNC Park to American Family Field, Miller Park, whatever you want to call it, in Milwaukee. So certainly a ballpark boost when looking at the home park factor for Carlos Santana. He's hitting third in their lineup. And the lineup is obviously better than the Pirates. So if Carlos Santana is available, you need a corner infielder or a utility hitter, add him. And then with the Cubs situation at third base, I think it just sort of just dries up the other guys that you mentioned, Wisdom and Mancini, who is now no longer services are needed. Trey Mancini, and Nick Madrigal. I think that his time, playing time as a starter, is going to be drying up because he was getting extra burn at third base as well. So cut. If you had Wisdom, Mancini, or Madrigal, it's the Candelario, it's the Candyman show initially came, I'm happy to see that. But yeah, Wisdom is rostered on quite a bit of teams. I don't think that he's going to end up having enough playing time to need his
it would be
services
wise to drop Patrick Wisdom. Next, the NL East, we will knock this one out quickly, but the only teams making moves, Braves didn't really need to make any moves. They added Nicky Lopez, a little infield depth. They added Brad Hand and then Pierce Johnston a week ago. He's already made a couple of relief appearances, so that's a loaded bullpen, and they're gonna get AJ Minter back soon, and they got Kirby Yates and Iglesias. Man, this team is just freaking loaded. And then Max Fried, I guess is coming back and made his final rehab start. He'll be back later this week. Would be nice if guys like Kyle Wright comes back. I think Colby Allard is pretty much done. He showed a little promise, someone to look into for next season. So yeah, the Braves are set. And then here are the other two teams. Philadelphia Phillies, they added Michael Lorenzen from Detroit. Detroit has been having some really quality starting pitchers this year despite not getting any run support. He's got the 15th best mark among qualified starting pitchers with a 6.5% walk rate. So I think Lorenzen in Philly, I think that's a good move. They also flipped across state, if my geography is correct, to Pittsburgh. They shipped Bailey Falter for Rodolfo Castro, and this is on the heels of Josh Harrison getting designated for assignment. So Lorenzen and Castro there. And we'll talk about the last team last because this is the most interesting, but any thoughts there about the Braves or the Phillies?
Braves, real life, Nicky Lopez, if something happens, just needing the defense, kind of similar to Austin Hedges and the Rangers, right? You don't need to get another bat to do something. Let's just get a good real life player. So nothing for the fantasy perspective or impact, I should say. And then Brad Hand and Pierce Johnston are also just there. I don't even think, Pierce Johnston, I think, is like fifth on my bullpen report right now. And Brad Hand's not even going to make it because AJ Minter has been reinstated off the IL, and Joe Jimenez and Kirby Yates have been pitching good, and Pierce Johnson's better than Brad Hand. So yeah, good moves there for real life perspectives. And then with the Phillies, Michael Lorenzen, he's been pitching really well, ditching some of the pitch mix, right? Kind of simplifying things a little bit there. He is going to get a downgrade in terms of park factor going from Comerica Park, which is 22% below average in terms of home run park factor, and then going to Philadelphia at Citizens Bank Park, which is 8% above. So when you combine those two, that's a 30% differential or delta, however you want to coin that term. So that's not great. He's going to be getting the Braves twice, and that's also not great. So there could be some spots where it's not as easy to be rolling out Michael Aronson, but for the most part, he's been pitching damn well. So if pitchers pitching damn well, you roll them out there. So keep doing it.
And now the fun part, the Miami Marlins, just like wheeling and dealing, baby. So a few days ago, they went out and got David Robertson.
This is your broke friend in Vegas, by the way. This is the one guy that still goes to every trip, but just doesn't have the money to do what everybody wants to do.
I like what they've done. I really like this team.
So, I get it. They have the best time in Vegas too.
Trust me. Oh yeah. So their bullpen was kind of falling apart. You got Dylan Floro. He's not been good. So they shipped him. They flipped him for Jorge Lopez. Ironically, on one of my main events, those were like my two late round sleeper closers, Dylan Floro and Jorge Lopez. And obviously that did not work out all that well. David Robertson from the Mets comes over, already has a save for the Marlins, right as AJ Puck has fallen apart. So now that's good for them. And then this is kind of a shocker. Well, okay, they added Josh Bell, who I just have not been a Bell fan now for quite some time, but he'll assume a full-time role at first base. They just got Avisail Garcia back. But man, the myth, the legend, Jake Berger, among the MLB home run leaders, one of the best hitters, power hitters in baseball. You look at his power metrics, like 98th percentile, like one of the best in baseball. He's now going to, replace the Birdie, Segura thing that's been going on at third base. They originally were looking at Candelario. I guess that didn't work out, but they got the man, Jake Berger. So this fits well. You now have a front five with Jazz Chisholm back of, best like contact guy in baseball, Luis Arraez at the top, lefty masher, best in the league, Jorge Soler second, Brian De La Cruz coming into his own third, Jazz Chisholm superstar four, and then Jake Berger five. It's a pretty good lineup.
Not too shabby. Birdie was getting an increase in playing time, so you're going to have to monitor that, because if it dries up at third base, where's he going to move around to? If the PT dries up, he's going to be a cut in deep leagues, and we're not going to be ending up with that Birdie fever because he was getting an increase in playing time. So that's interesting of note. Having Avisail Garcia back kind of muddies the waters just a little bit there with health. And I kind of feel like they have too many mouths to feed. So I would monitor the usage of Garcia and Sanchez moving forward, because there could be some playing time finagling that might not be beneficial towards a fantasy manager. Robertson blew the save today, though. So he went out there, David Robertson. It was 1-0 against the Phillies, and he allowed three runs. Let's see how he did that. Two hits, one walk, three earned runs on one home run, and the home run was allowed to Nick Castellanos. So, that's tough to do in your second go about, but I still think his rope is going to be kind of long there, or his leash, however you want to say it, because they brought him in to be the closer. You can kind of see that that's what they wanted to do. There was rumblings about him getting a majority of the saves there. Some percentages were thrown out, but maybe every once in a while, Tanner Scott gets the rare save opportunity, but I still think it is David Robertson's to be had. And AJ Puck is cuttable.
He gone. So a quick recap. I think that we're kind of on the same page. We think that despite maybe little park differences or moving from NL to AL, that Verlander and Scherzer will probably be in a good spot. That perhaps CJ Cron and Randall Grichuk can kind of find that magic from the beginning. That Aaron Civale will be quite all right. Jordan Hicks might have a longer leash than we think if Jordan Romano. Injury sticks around. The Jack Flaherty will kind of be the same old Jack as always. That Lance Lynn has been pretty unlucky and really is due. And then they've got a nice platoon thing going on, a la San Francisco Giants style. The Padres, I think, could, you know, make a race out of things and make things fun. The Giants have done nothing at the deadline. Neither have the Reds. And then, you know, Candelario reunion there in the Cubs is pretty nice. And then the Marlins, man, they got the Burger Man. They got some interesting players there. Who do you think? So right now, the wild card race, and kind of want to end things here. You've got pretty much, I mean, you know, the Braves, you know, they're locked up. Dodgers, it's close, right? Right. In that division, I still think they kind of pull it off. Reds versus Brewers is going to be close. But Philly, they've really crept up there. But between Philly, San Francisco, Milwaukee, and then the Diamondbacks, Marlins, Cubs, and Padres, there are only three spots. So I guess my question is, who are the three wildcard teams that make it in? Let's just say just for ease of argument, like Milwaukee wins the division and Cincinnati's still in the mix. So you've got the Reds, Phillies, Giants, Brewers, Diamondbacks, Marlins, Padres. Which three you think get in?
I don't think the Reds get into the playoffs. I know. Start throwing your tomatoes.
Very possible. No. It's very possible. It seems like it would trend that way.
Diamondbacks, I think that they're going to end up being able to squeak in. I think that the Brewers or the Cubs, man, the Cubs, dude. I think the Cubs get in. Fuck it. I'm going to say it. I think the Cubs get in. Let's go.
All right.
Cubs, Diamondbacks, and Padres. How about that? Yeah. Let's flip some things. Let's get nasty these next 2 months. I want to see the Padres in the playoffs. Come on. Bring it.
Well, I think the Brewers win that division. I actually think you're right. I think the Reds may not make it, and that's just kind of running out of gas with the pitchers. There could be a setback with Green, Lodolo, like, you don't know. But I think Philly gets in there pretty easily, just kind of getting things going at the right time. I think the Padres get there. I know they're like kind of six games behind all the rest. I think that's really not too much to get there. They're kind of my team that I think really sneaks in there. And the third one, man, I really don't know, right? I mean, between the Reds, Giants, Diamondbacks, Miami, I'd like to see Miami get in there. I know they're kind of not the most fun team, but like, I don't know. I all of a sudden like the Marlins because they got Jake Berger.
And they're the cheap friend in Vegas that has the greatest time. So
yeah. Exactly.
And I mean that towards like going to the bachelor party. I'm not talking about like NFBC Las Vegas.
Of course.
That's not. And I'm talking like
everyone knows.
Yeah. And then real quick, Vladdy, before we get out of here, just because we usually cater towards NFBC and stuff like that. I think a couple of things, if you're in Yahoo, CBS, ESPN, I'm pretty sure that the ownership percentages will be a little bit lower. So if you do need saves, Gregory Santos of the White Sox, add him. Andres Munoz of the Seattle Mariners and Matt Brash, if they're available, you could look to add either of them with Paul Sewald now pitching in Arizona. So those are kind of two of the obvious ones, but maybe not so obvious to some people, or maybe they haven't, you know, been paying too much attention to everything at the trade deadline. And the ownership percentages are just a little bit different there. So those are some names that could make a big impact for you in your leagues if you do need saves. Yeah,
I like I try to get to Gregory Santos, just way too popular this past weekend. But absolutely, yeah. I think he's a good guy because I don't, unfortunately, think that Liam Hendricks is going to be fine the rest of the season, nor be able to get that job back. But anyways, Maddie, it was a pleasure to do the show with you. It's been a while. Hopefully we will be able to get together in person sometime soon. Football season's coming up, but right now we have leagues to win. We have people to help win those leagues. And so thank you very much for joining me this week. For Matthew Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.